I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. When he came to America in 1977, Yakov Smirnoff was already a comedian, but it was his fresh, off-the-boat, Cold War comedy style that got him noticed by the entertainment industry. This hour, we'll talk with the comedian about his humor, his life in Branson, and what will be happening at his theater while he's on a nationwide tour. We'll also discuss how Smirnoff used the culture shock of moving to America to launch his career. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Here's betting that you remember this guy.
My name is Yakov Smirnov. I am a comedian from Russia. Thank you very much. I am actually from Russia. I was born there, grew up there, worked as a comedian out there. What surprises me, American people don't know we have comedy in Russia. We have comedians. They're there. They're dead.
Well, after 20 years in Branson, Yakov Smirnoff's pulled up stake and he's hitting the road. In fact, he plays in Kansas City this weekend. His story is classic rags to riches, with fame coming thanks at least in part to a helping hand from a guy named Johnny Carson, who brought him on his show once and practically fell apart when Smirnoff cracked that America has so many things that the Soviet Union did not. Things like warning shots. Yakov Smirnoff is here in the studio with me, and so nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Wow.
Yeah.
This is exciting to hear things that I haven't heard in a while.
Yeah, a long time.
Yes,
yeah,
yes.
Absolutely. Well, you were in Branson for 20 years.
Yes.
Why are you pulling up stakes?
Actually, I'm going to cut down my schedule to October and November, so I'm still based in Branson. However, 20 years is long enough to be in one spot, and you want to come back on the road and talk to people everywhere. That's what I'm doing on tour, and the tour is called Happily Ever Laughter.
Yeah.
And the reason
a good name for it.
Yes, and the reason most people in the country don't know that this became my passion like about 15 years ago. I started seeing this connection between love and laughter, and realized that there might be a law of laughter that people are not aware of, kind of just like law of gravity or law of magnetic attraction.
Meaning what?
Meaning that laughter can be created intentionally. And I believe I do that for a living, and most people experience laughter when they are in a friendly relationship. Like in the beginning of the relationship, a romantic relationship, there would be no second date if people didn't create laughter in that first date.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started thinking about this because I thought, well, but they don't know how to sustain it.
Yeah.
And so that became my passion. I went, got my master's degree in psychology.
And you're teaching now, too.
I do. I teach. I'm a professor at Missouri State University in Springfield, and I teach that specific skill. How do you create laughter? Then I thought, why can't I teach everyone across the globe about this? So that became my passion, and that's what you're going to be able to see if you come to the Improv this weekend, Thursday through
Sunday. Yeah,
I will guarantee you that you will learn all the secrets that you need to know to create a lot more laughter in your life.
And this is up in Zona Rosa, just
That's
so folks
correct.
Know where the Improv is. Well, you've actually done some research on this, and you have figured out, and maybe some folks might come by this information naturally, but women are looking for men who make them laugh, and men are looking for women who laugh at what they say.
Exactly.
And there's that connection makes a lot of sense.
And what's interesting about this, that like eHarmony.com has 10 million subscribers. The number one quality that people are looking for is sense of humor.
No kidding.
However, they don't see that distinction that you just said. that men are looking for somebody to laugh. I had breakfast, this is honest to God truth, 2 days ago with a couple who just celebrated their 80th wedding anniversary. And when I met them, I was just blown away because they were giggling, they were laughing, they were holding hands. And I said to them, what is your secret? They said, we're afraid to fall down. but we sat down and we talked about this. And I said, what do you really think the secret is? And she said, it's simple. He makes me laugh. And I said to him, what do you think your secret is? And he said, she laughs.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
That's it.
And there's a master thesis wrapped up right there, right?
I mean, it took me a little longer than that, but that's what it boiled down to, because in the beginning of the relationship, we are automatic. We do whatever it takes to get that laughter, to create that laughter, and then we stop.
Well, how hard is it for you to sort of pull up stakes in Branson? You're staying there, you've said, but you're going out on the road again. You haven't done that for a long time. You're flying again without a net.
That's true.
And I'm wondering what that feels like for you, Jakob.
Well, it feels exciting and a little scary because I've been comfortable for all these years and people coming in. I have 2,000-seat theater there. By the way, it's a heck of a deal here because you get $16 ticket here in the Improv, and in Branson it's $40 ticket. It's really a great deal for and you'll come out and laugh your Yakov. So I encourage that. I totally encourage that. And so, but it is a little scary because it's new. I'm even though I do this and it's my passion and I share with people. All this knowledge, and it's life-changing. I'm not kidding. This is not just a comedy show. I did it on Broadway and got great reviews from New York Times. Mm-hmm. And so I know that this works. However, when you come out of your comfort zone, you hope that people will come and discover you, rediscover Yakov, basically. That's what we're trying to do.
You know, you've been in this position before in your career. In reading about you, you had all this success in the 1980s. And then the Soviet Union collapses in the early 1990s, and suddenly your career teeters a bit. In fact, David Letterman predicted as much, saying on a show once that you would soon be out of work with the collapse of the Soviet Union because you based so much of your show on that. Little did he know that he was almost right.
He was right.
What happened to you after the collapse of the Soviet Union?
I made number one in the top 10 list as Yakov Smirnoff will be out of work, and I thought it was funny. But about 6 months, it didn't take very long. And all of a sudden, my contracts in Vegas, Atlantic City, Reno, Tahoe were not renewed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do anything that would upset people. However, the tension between Soviet Union and America disappeared. And I was perceived, and I didn't know that. I was just a guy who was trying to buy a car and, you know, have a
mortgage. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was making a big difference, you know. And it started maybe part of it was when Reagan's were at the White House. They invited me several times, and I was writing the speeches. The first speech that the Reagan delivered in Kremlin, when they asked me to help them to look at that speech and see if it makes sense, and I told them that I didn't think it was ideal because they were kind of talking down to the Soviet regime, and I don't think they would appreciate it.
Mm.
And say, well, do you mind rewriting the speech? And I'm like, me?
Are you kidding?
Are you serious? And then I'm thinking, if this doesn't work, I don't have any countries to go to. You know, where am I going?
Yeah.
So, but it worked out, and I did do that, and Reagan, and they put jokes in there that I suggested.
You actually wrote jokes for the summit meeting between Reagan and Gorbachev,
I did,
right?
I did. And I talk about this in my show, and it got laughs. Delayed laughs, unfortunately, because they were waiting for the translation for the headsets.
Oh, yeah.
I forgot about this, and I thought, oh, my gosh, this is the end of it.
And
then they went crazy, and I went and changed my pants. So the whole, it worked out. But I was so much associated with that, that change, that release of that tension, that it became kind of a disposable thing that, you know what? There is no need for Yakov. and which,
because people perceive that you were breaking the tension,
correct.
And there was so much tension there. So as soon as the tension goes away, what do we need you?
Exactly. Exactly.
And how was that for you?
Scary.
I bet.
Scary.
Yeah.
We lived in the house in Pacific Palisades, and very nice, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. $2.5 million home.
Yeah.
And and all of a sudden there was no money to pay mortgage, and it was really scary. But it also was a blessing in disguise, because people start telling me about Branson. And I I'm thinking, well, maybe in Branson, maybe they don't know that the Soviet Union collapsed. I don't know.
Might have been a few people down there who didn't realize it. Yeah.
So, but what was great about Branson, that it's really kind of it's like a Wild West in some ways, because there is no anybody domineering that space. So if you walk in and you're willing to work and you have talent and you deliver, people will come. And that's what happened. And I've been there 20 years, and it's been wonderful to land there. Also, what it did for me, it became like my laboratory of laughter.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave me a chance to develop new material, new awareness, go get back to college, get my master's degree in psychology. All of those things, I don't think I would have ever done that if I was in Los Angeles. Hmm. I don't think I would have kind of known who I am. And now I have a feeling that resurfacing, coming back out, will give people such a different perspective on what I can offer. And I really believe in this. It's very scientifically driven, but it's very funny. And it's like Home Depot of comedy.
Yeah.
You can do it. I can help.
We're visiting with Yakov Smirnoff. He performs Thursday through Sunday at the Improv Comedy Club up in Zona Rosa. More information, funnybonecentral.com. And by all means, if you want to join our conversation with Yakov Smirnoff, give us a call. 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You wound up having your own theater down in Branson.
Yes, I have a 2,000
seat
theater.
And you filled it up most nights, right?
I fill it up most of the time. And thank God, everything, I showed up. I didn't, I've been learning English 20 years by then. Then I moved to the Ozarks. I had to start all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Mel Tillis was teaching me English, so this was not an easy start. But I was determined, and the kids at that time, my kids were little, and this was a great place for, Soda City and all of that surrounding, very safe environment. Mm-hmm. Because in Pacific Palisades, even though I was living right next door to Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks and Goldie Hawn, it was great. But we had security patrol, 24/7 guards, alarms, all of that. We came to Branson. I haven't locked my car in 20 years.
Wow.
I don't know where it is, but it doesn't matter. It makes sounds good.
Yeah. Well, when you were, you're a poor kid from the Soviet Union, you come to this country, and before long, you just said you're sitting down with President Reagan in the White House.
Yes.
You're helping to craft speeches. How heady was that for you? How did you negotiate a transition like that?
Oh, gosh. Humbling, amazing.
Was it too much for you?
Well, I enjoy it. I mean, it was a great ride. First time when I met the president, I didn't think it was for real, because I was performing at the comedy club in Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
and the guy who owned the newspaper Washington Times, Arno Borchgraf, he was in the audience, and he said, look, I'm hosting the president at my house and in a couple of weeks. I think you would be a great guest that he would connect to. And I'm thinking, this guy is loony. There is no way this is happening, And then he calls me next day and, says, here are tickets to come. I'll pick you up. And so he picks me up at the airport. I'm still kind of going, and he's coaching me. How do you address the president? How do you address the first lady? What do you say? And so we're in the car and we're pulling up to his house, and there's It's like a Die Hard scene. You know, there's two helicopters hanging
yes.
over the house.
Yes.
They barricaded all the streets. And I'm in the car with him, and I'm shaking. I'm not kidding. I'm like going, what are they gonna do? And so they ask him to step out of the car. They ask him to. They search the guy. He gives him all the IDs. He said, "I own the house. The president coming to it. It doesn't matter." They
yeah.
still do all this procedure, and then they shine the light. I'm sitting on the passenger seat, and I'm going, "Oh, I'm next." And so they shine the light on me, and the guy sees me, the FBI guy, and he says, "You've done Miller Lite commercial, right?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Come on in."
Yeah, that's all it takes. And then, yeah.
So it was a roller coaster ride kind of thing. And here I am sitting with the president, you know.
Did you develop any kind of relationship? Because I've seen pictures of you
yes.
and he's leaning over and you're talking. You're both
yes.
laughing. Did you develop a relationship
yes,
with Ronald Reagan?
Yeah, definitely. From the moment we met, it was like an instant connection. There was only 18 people at that dinner. And we spent the whole evening telling jokes about that. This is the evening where Reagan sent helicopters to Gaddafi was acting up.
Mm.
So behind Reagan, like behind you, it was like this. Behind Reagan, there was an officer, you know, with the football,
mm-hmm.
which has all the codes for nuclear attack. So yeah. I'm thinking, I'm telling jokes to this guy. I can't bomb because if I bomb, he bombs, we're in trouble.
Everyone's in trouble.
Big trouble.
Yeah.
So after that, it was since then I've been to the White House several times, and then whenever they wanted some fresh supply of Russian jokes, because he was a big fan of that, you know, say, "Hey, come have lunch with the president." And Nancy helped my wife to pick up her wedding dress. I mean, it was really kind of a cool
thing. That's just
cool
nuts.
Thing. Yeah,
that
it was
is
crazy.
Just crazy.
It was crazy.
What did your parents think about that? The parents who came over here from the Soviet Union with you.
They were invited to White House, and they were, they were like on. They couldn't believe all of this. This is when they all of this added up. You know, 2020 was doing the interview with me because after movie Moscow and Hudson was released, and
that you were in with Robin Williams.
With Robin
yeah.
Williams, mm-hmm. right? And so my parents, they asked him, they want to interview them as well. So they called him and they said, "We'll be shooting you on Wednesday." And
I
my
know it's
parents
coming.
Moved out. Yeah, they literally. So then they did an interview, and it was so much fun. And they it aired across the nation, so they got phone calls from all these people. So they feel they're now in show business. My parents. So I take them to a nice fancy restaurant to celebrate this, and my dad went to the bathroom to wash his hands. Attendant gave him a paper towel. My dad signed it. So they had a great time with it. It was thank you for asking this because I haven't thought about this. It was very, I was obviously proud and excited.
Oh boy, sure, absolutely.
I couldn't believe that this all happening. And coming to Branson was kind of awakening at first, but then I realized that what I had in the past was really a product of my desire to succeed and accomplish and achieve and all that. But coming to Branson were more introspective. I became like an adult. I had to run a theater,
mm-hmm.
60 people that are relying on my ability to bring people in and pay mm-hmm. their salaries. I never had that responsibility in the past. I didn't have enough time to even go inside and try to understand what am I passionate about. It was more like, this is what the society wants. This is what they want. And so it's really been a blessing to come land there and establish this safe place
mm-hmm.
where it's kind of like I was a caterpillar using up whatever. And then I went into cocoon. And now I'm coming out as a butterfly. That's how I feel.
Mm,
and
mm-hmm.
that butterfly can teach and help people laugh and then also learn how to create laughter in their own lives.
Huh. Yakov Smirnoff's our guest. Again, he appears this weekend up in Zona Rosa at the Improv Comedy Club. More information, funnybonescentral.com for tickets. Our number here, if you want to give us a call to visit with Yakov, 816-235-2888. Our email address, UpToDate at KCUR.org, or tweet us at KCUR UpToDate. Let's go to some phone calls here, and Jeff from Shawnee. Jeff, good morning.
Hi, guys. Boy, you know, I had never thought about a comedy writer or a comedian doing bits for the president. But
yep.
I guess, you know,
it's amazing,
I've not thought
isn't
about it?
It
before. But I will now.
Yeah.
Now, what I really called about is I have gone to Branson a couple of times to see Yakov and his show. And both times that I've been there, it has struck me that this man takes time out after his show to personally come out onto the buses and thank people, you know, and it's not just a superficial, you know, actor's thanking. It was actually a man coming out and really thanking us for coming and seeing him entertain us. And I was really struck by that. Other people I've talked to have also said, yes, I've been down there and he's done the same thing for us. And I really think that speaks volumes for the
Thank
kind
you.
Of a guest you have.
And
hey,
I will do the same here at the Improv. I will come out. I love connecting to people and getting feedback and understanding what they really want to hear and what they got out of that.
And that's part of the shtick down in Branson. That's part of the connection that so many of you guys make with the folks who come down there. You make the extra effort, right?
I think so. I don't know if it's as much as it was earlier. When I got there, pretty much everybody did that. And then little by little, I don't know if they're doing it as much. But people who want to connect, they do. And I do think that that's benefit of a person coming there and saying, wow, I could shake his hand. I could really say thank you for what I received.
I mean, it's a funny thing, fame. Why did your fame, why has it endured as much? I mean, obviously what you brought to the American scene was something a little different. And boy, it's had a terrific shelf life, it seems to me.
Well, I've been contemplating with that because in the beginning, I think what happened, I walked into it without really understanding it. I walked into tension that was happening between Soviet Union and America, and I was able to release that tension.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't plan on it. Some of your listeners probably heard or seen the movie Being There. That's kind of what I was. I was a guy who just walked out there and go, oh, I said some things and they're laughing. Oh, wow. And so that's what happened. And the reason I'm so passionate about relationships, so it's kind of like from Russia to relationships, that's what I'm doing. That's why I'm, because like Johnny Carson had a quote. He said, laughter is 80% relationships, 20% sense of humor. Connection happens. In the beginning, that's what Reagan was great at and changed the world, because he was using laughter, but laughter was just the trigger. That was just 20%. The first thing was a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
When he met with Gorbachev, I was privileged to meet the interpreter who was the only person with Gorbachev and Reagan. And I asked him, I said, was there any laughter there? I was trying to do my homework here.
Yeah.
And he said, not first 2 days. First 2 days, they were butting heads. They were not communicating. They were Gorbachev was telling him how to run America. Reagan was telling Gorbachev how to run Russia.
But then something changed.
He got up and headed for the door.
Reagan did.
And didn't want to put up with it anymore. And then he knew that he had to do something drastic. He turned around. He had a big smile on his face. He extended his hand to Gorbachev and said, my name is Ronnie. Can I call you Misha? Can we just play? Let's play Red Rover, let McDonald's come over. And Gorbachev laughed, and that's how the Berlin Wall came down.
They began talking. They began to connect a little bit.
They connected on the human level. And the human level, is that's what I talk about in my show. So please do come, and I'll share all of that. It all starts with the relationship, and there's very specific three steps that if you keep doing that, and you do that in the beginning of the relationship, every relationship, and laughter happens as a byproduct. And if you just focus on those three things, then all of a sudden you can create laughter anytime.
Yeah, that's just great. Just great stuff. Let's go back to some calls here. Gary from Lewisburg on the Kansas side. Gary, good morning.
Good morning. I've seen you in Branson years ago. Boy, was it great. It's such an honor to talk to you, Yakov.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're an excellent interview, too. I think other people should take a hold of that.
And anyway, my question. Thank you.
Sorry, I know my time is short. My question is, when you go back to Russia, if you could tell a little bit about your past travels back and forth as you saw the differences between the wall coming down and what your relationships politically like are over there, if they are.
Yeah.
How do you see the big differences of the shifts and changes? I would love to know what your thoughts are.
Great question, Gary. Thank you. Have you been back?
I went back several times. First time I went and I wasn't planning on going back. And I got a phone call from Showtime Network, and they said, we'd like you to go back to Russia. And I said, what did I do to you? This was 1990, right? And actually 1989, the Berlin Wall was just coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, the Berlin Wall is down. I said, yeah, but what if they're just remodeling? And so they said, we would like you to go. So I created this concept of the show called Yakov Smirnov from Moscow, Idaho. And so I said, I'll shoot half of it in Moscow and half of it in Idaho. And so that's what I did. And it was a very successful show, and it took me to places where I didn't think about going where I grew up and lived all my life, and found some things in the cellar there that we left because we couldn't take anything with us, so we just left stuff, and it was abandoned. And then I went there, and the guy...
It's your old house.
Old house.
Your old one-room apartment,
communal,
right?
apartment. But there was like
storage in the basement.
The basement where we would keep coal and potatoes for the winter and stuff like that. So it totally abandoned. So the camera guy had a light on his camera. So I said, I need to see where I'm going. So we're just... And he filmed it. It wasn't intended to. It was the best part of the show because I found things that I made as a child,
you're kidding me.
And things that my dad and I made together. And then I brought it to America, and it was such a joy to experience that. However, to answer your caller's question, the changes are huge. There is no – now I've been there several times, and Moscow has more millionaires right now than any other city in the planet.
Really?
Yes.
Did not know that.
So it went from total poverty to this amazing capitalism. However, people still live in poverty, most of the people. So the ones that were in the black market, they got a hold of capitalism. They were set up and ready. And they just were legalized, basically, and that's who became the wealthy ones. Putin's policies or politics, he is a prodigy of the KGB, and the KGB stands for Kiss Goodbye Your Butt. So I would not trust
this
guy.
That hasn't changed any.
No, nothing changed. He just disguised as democracy, but they know exactly how to control that population. They know how to take American money and not give them to the Russian people. So the dollar is welcome, but before you can spend it, you have to exchange it for rubles. So government keeps all the dollars, all the money.
Yeah.
And they're accumulating it, and they're buying gold with it, and they're strategic, very strategic.
Huh. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our great conversation here with Yakov Smirnov. We'll get phone calls from Mark, Sarah, and Janice. So please hang on and call us 816-235-2888 or drop us an email up-to-date at kcur.org. In our second half, we'll talk a little more about his upbringing and all kinds of other good stuff with Yakov Smirnov. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up-to-Date on KCUR. And And we're back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's conversation about who stole the American dream or how one blind man views the world differently, you can find that and all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. On tomorrow's program, we'll talk with a woman about how she came to terms with her twin sister's suicide. Plus, we'll have the latest installment of 90 Mile View and our weekend to-do list. But this hour, we're having a blast with Yakov Smirnoff. He's in town. He'll be performing Thursday through Sunday at the Improv Comedy Club up in Zona Rosa. More information about that, funnybonecentral.com. He is hitting the road again, and look out, America, here he comes. You know, at some point, Yakov, you developed this signature line, which I guess all the great comedians do at one point. Your line was, "What a country."
Yeah.
Where did you come up with that?
It took time, and I was telling jokes about whatever was coming my way, and so if it was in America, you can always find a party. In Russia, party always finds you. What a country, you know, things like that. And I kept saying it just in passing. It wasn't meant to be. There was no focus group. There was no, let's strategize. And people kept coming back to me and saying, "What a country, what a country." And I said, "You know what, maybe I should use that."
Use that.
Yeah, so at this moment, I'm searching for that line, and I believe that the audience and the media will eventually find it in my show. It's already in there. I just don't yet know. Like, gentleman who called earlier, one of my lines is like, "But you will now. I bet you never thought of it that way, but you will now." And he said that, "But I will now." So that might be one. The other one could be from America, what a country, to laughter, what a gift. Mm-hmm. Because GIFT it's an acronym that stands for Give Importance, Fun, and Time. That's actually the secret to laughter.
Yeah.
It creates the relationship.
You know, they say when it comes to writing, Yakov, that, you know, the good writers, they write what they know about. And I'm wondering with your own comedy, if this notion of poking fun at the former Soviet Union and poking fun at this country, it was sort of what you knew, and that's what you rolled with. Is that as simple as it was
it's
there?
It's simple as that. And since then, it has gone through several transitions as well, because then I became, I got married to an American woman. Then, so that was a lot of material that, you know, meeting her parents, you know, in Oregon, you know.
Oregon, there you go.
Yeah, yeah. So, her mom was really trying. She said, "So, Yakov, did you pick the date for the wedding?" And I said, "Wow, you can bring a date to your own wedding?" And then her dad wanted me to play golf with him, and my score was 84, and we didn't play a second hole. You're right, it got dark.
Okay.
And so what happened? So that was the routines for going, and then we had two kids, you know, Natasha and Alexander. My wife wanted a real American name for our daughter. She wanted to call her Brandy, and I said, "Brandy Smirnoff? Why don't we just send her to rehab daycare center?" So I mean, those routines were just happening because that's what you do. You just, and then coming to Branson, and there were routines because I had to learn that whole lifestyle, and so all of those things. And I believe that then the comedians do reflect their life on stage. Otherwise, it's not authentic. It's not real.
Well, Smirnoff is not your God-given name.
Correct.
Here, right?
Correct. It used to be Pokis, P-O-K-H-I-S, and it doesn't roll off your tongue as much as Smirnoff. And I used to I worked at the bar. That was one of my first jobs, was a bartender. And that wasn't, I was just trying to figure out where can I practice English. In the bar, probably not ideal to practice English. But still, it gave me audience, one, two people in front of me, and they would ask me, like, is your name Yakov? And I said, "No, it used to be Jack Daniels," or something like that. And so I would get a laugh, and then I would count tips, and I would say, "Hey, that joke worked. I should keep it." So that was my first kind of a beginning. And that's where
Smirnoff,
I decided.
So Smirnoff, did you pick it just because
it,
of the label on
people
the bar?
People knew Smirnoff. They didn't have a problem remembering it very easily, yes. And I figure it's a very traditional Russian name. It's like Smith. So I could have been Bubba Smith or something, but I chose to keep my real name Yakov and then Smirnov, and it worked.
Let's go back to some phone calls here. Roger from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning. You there, Roger? Let's go to Janice from Leawood. Janice, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi. Thanks for having me. You're hysterically funny. I love
Thank
your
you.
Jokes.
Thank you so much.
But you are so on point about relationships. I'm married almost 40 years, and my husband is hilarious. I laugh till I cry.
Oh, it's wonderful.
That's the secret. That's
Good for you. Good
totally
for you.
Totally, that's it.
Good for you.
Yes.
And a lot of people are concerned because they're, especially women asking me and said, well, my husband makes me laugh, and what do? I want to give that same amount of happiness to him. And I say, you just need to laugh. That's all you need to do.
And I you know, he loves it. I think it's like an ego thing, but his jokes are hysterical. I tried stand-up a few times. I find it petrifying. But when I do it, I use his lines because he's the one with the jokes.
Yes. And women's laughter are what men are after.
Mm-hmm.
People think, women think that we're after sex. We're after your laughter.
There you go.
There's a lot of truth.
I tell young couples that. That's the secret. I tell young couples that. If you can make each other laugh, it'll last.
Hmm.
Exactly.
Great point, Janice. Thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Again, our number 816-235-2888. Our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. Mark from Prairie Village, good morning.
Hi, Steve. Great show.
Thanks.
Thank you. Yakov, your comment about being there describes a humble man, and that is what I've picked up from this show.
Thank you.
I've got a question. Tim Conway is in Branson. Do you ever run across him?
Yes.
And if so, can you talk about that? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Yeah. Oh, thank
great
you
Mark.
So much.
Yeah, Tim Conway, the great Tim Conway.
Love Tim Conway. Yes, I got a chance to spend some time with him, and I wish he was there more often. But when he comes there, he packs the house. People there is just such a gentle humor, amazing timing. I just think that it's so unique what he is able to deliver. I don't think anybody ever done that, and I don't know if they can repeat that.
Yeah.
So I really love his humor.
You know, you've worked with so many amazing people over the years, Yakov. I wanted to bounce a few names by you and just have you respond to them. Johnny Carson.
Oh, my. Johnny.
He was important to you.
Oh, huge, yes. Mm-hmm. And I tried to get on his show for many, many years. And there was a talent coordinator who did not care for my show, didn't like my humor. And he basically, after about 6 years of trying, he said to me, you're going to get on this show when the hell freezes over, basically. Just get off my hell freezes over. So I start watching Weather Channel. I'm going, okay, I'm determined. I'm going to tough it out. And then Carson saw my commercial, and it was Miller Lite commercial, and he asked, his name was Jim McCauley. He said, Jim, why don't we have this guy? He's funny. Why don't we have him on? And Jim said, of course, we were planning to. And so,
tomorrow.
So literally, it was that quick. And then he called, and he was not happy making that phone call. But he said, Johnny wants you on the show. And I said, I'd like to be on the show. Right, it was Thanksgiving time. And I said, I have a lot to be. I'm very grateful for a lot of things, and I want to be on the show on Thanksgiving or day before Thanksgiving. And he grudgingly agreed to that, and I did the show, and 30 million people tuned in, and the rest was history.
Yeah, what does that do to a career when 30 million people tune in like that?
It was mind-boggling, and also he was laughing so hard.
Yeah, he was really.
I've
seen clips on your website,
And you know what happens? It's like most comedians just do a set and then they don't get to sit down with him. That was really a royal privilege. There's only like five or six people that he invited on the first time to sit and talk to him. And he waved me over and I was like, I wasn't ready for it. And he wasn't, nothing was scripted. And I sat down and I said the line that you said earlier, in America, you have things that we never had in Russia, like policemen have warning shots, and he almost fell off the chair.
Yeah, he almost did.
And
yeah.
Jim McCauley ran up to me right when we went to a break. He said, can you do this? Can you do another one next week? And I said, how about when the hell freezes? But I did it 7 times, and I was very, very fortunate.
Well, Johnny is sort of legendary for several things, but one of them is he was supposedly very difficult to get to know. Did you develop a relationship with him outside the show or not really?
Only when you put on makeup and next to each other, and he'll just say, you know, how are you and how are things going? And very superficial. And then after that, he was pretty private person.
Yeah. How about Rodney Dangerfield?
Well, that was
a guy I thought was just hysterical when I was in college and years afterwards. Just terrific.
Funny, wild, you know. I mean, that was my first engagement actually happened when I got paid for doing comedy first time in America, was at his club at Rodney Dangerfield's in New York. And so I basically was kind of coronated there in his club. And then HBO was doing this Young Comedian special with Rodney Dangerfield. And so I was one of people on that special. And that after that, my career also took off because they picked the funniest stuff, and he was hilarious to work with. So it was a good combination.
You know, I heard this story about Rodney once, maybe from a guest on the show. I'm trying to think who it was, but that the cast of the Miller Lite people got tired of Rodney, that Rodney would show up late. Rodney was difficult to work with. And there was some cast party once upon a time that Rodney showed up too late. And Dick Butkus and Bubba Smith picked up Rodney and supposedly sort of held him over the railing of a balcony and said, Rodney, we're tired of your stuff and cut it out. And it was just a great story. I'm trying to think who told us that story.
I'm glad it wasn't me. You know,
it wasn't you.
No, but that's a great story.
Yeah, just a funny deal. How about David Letterman?
Well, David Letterman and I, we were at the Comedy Store when he was on the way out, and I just got in, and that was the first person, or actually several people that I saw first night when I went to the Comedy Store. There was Robin Williams, David Letterman, Billy Crystal, Jay Leno, and Richard Pryor on one comedy. And I thought I died and went to heaven. Yeah. I was like right there. And I tell a joke that David Letterman helped me to fill out my citizenship application. It was for Iraq, but it was still.
But good guy?
Good guy, yes. Very private, very intelligent.
Yeah, very private.
Very private, yes, but good guy, yeah.
You know, coming up with material and the writing of the stuff, was comedy for you, Yakov, just something that sort of came to you in different moments of the day and you would sort of note it in your head?
Yes.
Or did you sit down at 2 o'clock every afternoon and think, I've got to come up with a new joke today?
It depends. If you're on a project and you want to complete, let's say, a Showtime special, then you create a timeline and it becomes a business or a Broadway show. Then it becomes like I have to deliver at a certain date. Otherwise, it's more like observing life and seeing what comes funny. I had a cute story that just happened not too long ago. I was performing in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Wow.
And it's an Amish country, and I didn't realize it. And so I was fascinated. I was like looking at the people driving their buggies and all that. I learned that they have names of the cities that they named those cities like 300 years ago, Amish people. And they were strange names. They were like, one was called Paradise, Pennsylvania. One was called Intercourse, Pennsylvania. And you supposedly get to Intercourse.
There's really an Intercourse, Pennsylvania? Our producer who's from out there is nodding his head.
Yeah, totally.
Lots of jokes probably when you were a kid, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And the Intercourse 300 years ago meant social interaction. We've come a long way. So you get to Paradise through Intercourse. So it's all kind of strategic. So I tell the owner of the theater, I said, would you show me around, drive me around? I want to see these towns. So we're driving. And my daughter calls, And she said, "Daddy, where are you?" And I said, "I'm in the middle of intercourse." and she said, "I'm surprised you answered the phone." I said, "I'm multitasking." And she said, "Who are you with?" I said, "With this guy named Bob." She said, "I'll call you later." Yeah. So, but you see what
I'm
saying?
That about
you
her
can't
father.
Write. Yeah, you can't write this kind of stuff. It just happens, and you just capture it, and you tell other people, and they're laughing, and you go, "Well, I got to go with it. That's just what happened."
You know, as a kid, you know, growing up in Odessa, Ukraine, you know, in a one-room apartment with your parents, did you see a future in comedy? I mean, where did that come from at a time and place so different from where you came to be later?
No, none of that was – no. I think it came from looking for a way to connect to people, really.
Mm-hmm.
And later on now, basically, that becomes full circle because connecting to people is what laughter is a byproduct of.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't understand that. I would, you know, I when living with – I mean, we had one little apartment and nine families lived in one apartment. My mom and dad and I shared the room till I was 26 years old. This is true. And so when my parents, I was young, little kid, my parents wanted to be romantic, they would send me to look out the window. And then wow. My dad would say, "What do you see in the window?" I said, "Our neighbors being romantic." and he said, "How can you tell?" I said, "Because their son is looking at me."
And I was waving at each
that's
other.
That's right. Yeah. And I was the only child because we had only one window. So that's where comedy came from. I felt connected. I felt I was in the presence of love mm-hmm. with my parents. Then I did the same thing with at school. I would go and I would make kids laugh. That was my teachers didn't care for it that much, but kids were connected to me. They were waiting for next crank, some joke or something.
Yeah.
We had one teacher who said that, you know, and she was not friendly. And she said to the class, "Anybody who's not smart, stand up." And I stood up. And she said, "Jakob, you're pretty smart." I said, "Yeah, but I didn't want you to be the only one standing." That was not smart. But it connected me to all the people, and that's how it continued to be. It was like a fuel to the fire. I just kept wanting to create more of that.
And you did some comedy in the Soviet Union?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. That's how I got, literally, I was able to get out because most people were not aware what America was about. It was so, it was distorted. It was not honest, but that was propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't know. And then I started working on the cruise ships on the Black Sea, and I met Americans, and I met Canadians. I met people from free world, and that's where my desire, my eyes lit up saying, "Wow, these people are they're so much happier. They had food." So whatever it was that made them happy, I wanted that, and that's what got me out.
Yakov Smirnoff's our guest. Again, he performs this weekend at the Funny Bone Comedy Club up in Zona Rosa, the Improv Comedy Club up in Zona Rosa. More information, funnybonecentral.com. Your decision, your family's decision to leave the Soviet Union, I've read that you and your dad were all for it, but
yes.
Mom wasn't
Mom
so sure.
Mom was not, yeah.
Why not? What was her hesitancy, Yakov?
Well, she was just concerned because my dad was an inventor, and he wasn't really producing a lot of money.
But he did invent something to determine the density of concrete.
Exactly.
Which,
boy, you've done your homework.
Yeah.
Boy, you did great.
I don't miss much
yes,
here.
No,
yes,
you
yeah.
did. Yeah, it's perfect. He created a device that measured integrity of concrete. So, and it wasn't, you know, it was not a huge deal, but it was for in Russia, they were using a lot of concrete. It was like national flower of Russia. So the communists gave him not enough, not a lot of money. Now it was worth it, but what it was enough to get three tickets to go to America. And and none of us knew about this. Dad kept it secret because he wanted in the right moment to create a better life for us. So he surprised my mom and I, when we start talking, and she kind of challenged him, she said, Mr. Big Shot, if they would even let us ever do this, how could we ever afford it? And that's when he got up, went to the kitchen cupboard, got his coffee can from the back of the cupboard, opened the coffee can, and it was packed with money. And both my mom and I are stared in disbelief and in shock. She said, "Where in the world did you get coffee?
Yeah.
And where are all this money from?" And so that's when we learned that they gave him this money, and that was how we got out.
So you all did it legally. You didn't sneak off.
We did it legally.
You did it, yeah.
Totally. And Jimmy Carter was so helpful at that time because he was very much for human rights, and the Russians were in a tough spot. They needed food. They were literally starving, and so they needed wheat. So he said, "You let people out that want to go," and that's where I knew that if we had that short window of opportunity, applying for a visa, we'll give you wheat. So we were exchanged for tons of wheat. So every time now I see a Wonder Bread truck, I salute. You
say,
know,
thank exactly, you very much. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, okay. And so now you're on the road. For how long?
This will last a month and a half. I'll go to 10 different cities, and we'll just basically spread the word that I'm ready to come back out and tour more, and then do more other things.
Boy, it's been terrific to have you here.
Thank you.
What a great guest, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. And I encourage your audience, come and laugh your Yakov.
There you go.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yakov Smirnoff, again, performs Thursday through Sunday at the Improv Comedy Club up in Zona Rosa. More information, funnybonescentral.com. You can go hear him. Hey, it's been great to have you.
Thank you so
all
much.
All the best. You
Thank
bet.
You. I appreciate it.
Don't forget to follow KCUR on Facebook and this program on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. You can follow me at Steve Kraske. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk with a woman about how she came to terms with her twin sister's suicide. Plus, we'll have the latest installment of 90 Mile View and our weekend to-do list. Our show is produced by Steven Steigman, Danny Alexander, and Beth Lipoff. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.